This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Delegate Steve Landis joins us on the long line from his office in Richmond. Good afternoon, Steve.
Hi, Coy. How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm fighting a cold. I think I've got that grunge that's been going around, but other than that, I'm doing fantastic.
Well, good. I hope you don't come down with anything too serious.
Now, that's got to be challenging for y'all because you're only there for a few weeks. God forbid you should get a cold or...
Well, and the bad thing is when you've got this many people in one spot,
right.
It's easy to pass germs around.
Right. Hey, I wanted to congratulate you first off before we go any further. You recently received an award from the Agribusiness Council, the Virginia Agribusiness Council.
Correct.
The Distinguished Service Award. Explain that to us.
Well, every year they recognize individuals that have worked with them and that have supported Virginia agribusiness and agriculture in the Commonwealth of Virginia. And I was honored this year to get that award along with Congressman Goodlatte, who's a friend of mine and also obviously represents a good portion of the 25th House District that I represent. And as a former employer, I worked for him for 2 years, so it was great to be able to share that with him. And it's one of my colleagues described it as kind of the, for those of us that represent mainly rural areas, it's kind of like receiving the Academy Award if you were in entertainment.
So. Steve, do you think, I'm going to answer my own question. I think a lot of people underestimate the extent to which a farming way of life, an agricultural way of life is alive. I don't want to say alive and well, but it's definitely alive in the Valley and even here in Central Virginia.
It is, and it's a very important part of Virginia's overall economy. It's about a $47 billion a year business. When you add everything, the farms, forestry, all those related industries and businesses, and it's important. And in the Valley especially, it's a key important of a key ingredient and of importance to our economy. And even Western Albemarle and Central Virginia, there are still many farms, and it's an important way of life to Virginians as well.
Delegate Steve Landis is our guest today, and if you've got a question or a comment for Delegate Landis, give us a call, 977-1070. Steve, I wanted to applaud you, and I wish I could congratulate you on its passage, but I can't. But I want to applaud you for House Resolution 45. Tell folks what this is. We'll talk about what happened to it, but I've been talking about this for days, applauding any effort to open government up a little bit more and make the process more familiar to a greater number of Virginians. And I know that this was something that's of concern to you, and so you created this. Tell us what this legislation was and what its goal was.
My legislation was what I called in committee a baby step to open up the process a little bit to our citizens. It's hard for citizens to get to Richmond during the General Assembly session, and few do. They just, you know, they're working, they have other commitments and things. And what House Resolution 45 would have done would set up a pilot program to see and to allow the House to basically transmit our daily sessions to the citizens through video and audio transmissions, and hopefully on webcast and public TV stations. The Senate has been doing this for a few years, and it's I think, an important effort that they've done, and it's worked out well for them. Unfortunately, the House of Delegates is a little bit, in my mind, behind the time in being able to do that. And this was just an effort to at least, you know, do a one-year pilot to see how it works and to see if it would be successful. I think it would, but I think in my mind doesn't hurt to try. A lot of people don't know, but I got my start and graduated from VCU in mass communications and was a major in basically journalism. So I've always been interested in public access to government and have always enjoyed participating in government and covering government too. And I think this is just one way to make it easier for the public to see what we're doing and how the process works. And I think it would serve as an educational tool for our young people as well.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more with you. But the fate of it is that the Rules Committee, your bill was one of, I think, three of these types of bills. The Rules Committee yesterday in the House killed all three bills, and the Majority Leader Morgan Griffith said his argument was basically if we have this kind of thing, then people will be showboating to the cameras. That will make this session go on longer than it is. It'll eat up time. We were already too busy, so we can't do this. A very small price to pay, in my opinion, but... But what was your reaction, your thoughts on his argument?
Well, the majority leader, Morgan's a good friend of mine. I just disagree with him from the standpoint. The argument, same argument was made in Washington when C-SPAN was started with the House of Representatives. And obviously, I'm a fan of C-SPAN and think that that's a great asset for the public and a very good tool to be able to use for seeing our democracy in action. And then the Senate. The U.S. Senate followed suit a few years later, and now we have C-SPAN 1 and C-SPAN 2. So I just disagree with Morgan on that. I think it would add, if you will, to some people, especially people that want to run statewide, to, you know, become more. I mean, I remember nobody knew who Newt Gingrich was until C-SPAN occurred, and Newt became the minority whip and then Speaker of the House, partly because people listened to what he had to say. And I think that's an important thing that sometimes Republicans forget, is that it's a great tool to get the points of view across of what you want and a wider audience other than just the people in your district to hear and learn what your concerns are and what you think are important issues. You know, even the British Parliament is broadcast, and many state legislatures are. One of the things I'm going to do in the interim is look at to see if there's really been an increase in time it takes to act on legislation in other states that have this in place.
There you go.
And see if I can kind of come back and prove my point maybe a little more clearly. I'm on the Rules Committee, so I also hope to, in the interim, maybe get our clerk to look at coming up with some options to see how we might be able to implement this even without legislation, or to at least have our clerk to look at and see what it would take and at least cost. That's the other issue I think some members had is, you know, how much is this going to cost? And I didn't have and don't have good figures on that because we've never really done that. But so, you know, there's some legitimate questions out there, I think, on this issue. But I do think overall it'd be beneficial for the public and I think beneficial for the public's elected representatives.
Steve Landis represents parts of Albemarle County, Augusta County, Rockingham County, and the entire city of Waynesboro, District 25 in the Virginia House of Delegates. And he's our guest on Charlottesville right now. Phone lines are open at 977-1070. Steve, what gets me the most about this issue, and then we'll move on, but what gets me the most is that there, and a lot of folks don't know this, but there are cameras already there. There's cameras there for the webcasting so that, you know, LAs and folks back in the offices can see what's going on. And so a good first step would be just to open up that access to a greater number of Virginians.
Exactly. And I think the cost is very minimal if we just did the webcast to start with, because obviously we have the equipment pretty much in place, and much of that has already been, you know, the dollars have been spent to set that up. My assistant can watch me and watch the House floor sessions on her computer to see, you know, how things are going. They can listen in to the floor sessions while we're in session, and anybody in the you know, basically state government has access to that. And it just seems to me it's only fair to open that up to the people that pay the taxes so that that state government can be here for those kinds of actions. So.
Yeah, and again, I've said this before, and I applaud you for this. I think it took some courage for you to go against the leadership in suggesting this, but, you know, I sort of scratch my head and I say to myself, it's 2007. I ought to be able to go on my computer and look at my state government.
Yeah, and yeah. I think eventually it will occur. Sometimes things, as you know, in Virginia, things and changes come about slowly. But I think eventually you'll see the House of Delegates follow suit with what the Senate's done. And one of the things the Senate's done to try to minimize, if you will, those floor speeches, they've done what the Congress did, and they moved that to the end of the day as opposed to the beginning of the day like we have it in the House of Delegates. And that
interesting
basically minimizes that those political speeches because it puts it right before adjournment, and most people after a full day of work don't want to sit around and listen to you know, people pontificate about this or that.
The last thing they want to do is showboat right before it's time to go home.
Right.
Delegate Steve Landis is our guest. Let's change topics here and talk about the No Child Left behind ACT, because I know you've taken some real leadership on this, on trying to make it work with Virginia, and in some places it really doesn't seem to work. Fill us in on the details on what's going on.
Well, a bill that I co-sponsored with Senator Emmett Hanger just passed the House today, which would set in place a process so that our Board of Education can continue to seek waivers from the U.S. Department of Education. And the waivers are an avenue to try to seek relief from what I consider an onerous part of the federal law, which means we're testing every year. We have to meet certain requirements that we're already doing under the standards of learning, or SOLs. It would also, if they're not successful with the waivers, ask them to go to our congressional delegation, because this year No Child Left Behind is being reauthorized in the Congress. And our congressional delegation has been very active and supportive of trying to get those waivers. They could seek changes in the federal law to provide relief to Virginia. And then, if we're not successful there, the board's supposed to report back to the General Assembly by October 1st of this year to the education committees, and in turn could, and it's permissive at this point, to recommend if we need to withdraw from No Child Left Behind after going through those other two steps and seeing if we can seek relief.
Has any of the other states withdrawn from this, and is there a penalty? Or
well, the penalty and potential penalty is about $350 million in federal funds that is tied to the Elementary and Secondary Education Act, where No Child Left Behind is in. And that's the monies we receive for special education and some other areas. And for most school systems, it averages anywhere from $1 to $2 million a year. So that would be significant funding statewide if we were to withdraw. Now, the question is, if you do withdraw, would the federal government meet good on its promise to do that, or just withdraw funds from certain areas that they think you have not met the requirements for No Child Left Behind? That's unknown. I think other states are going to look at similar things like this, really put the pressure on this year for Congress to act and to make the changes, and hopefully see that be successful before we get to the point where we have to withdraw. But I think other states are considering the fact that we may have to do that. Virginia and states that have accountability programs are at a distinct disadvantage, because we've already been working on this. We already have something in place. The states that have had nothing in place, they're starting from ground zero, and it's very easy for them to achieve what is called average yearly progress. It's more difficult for states like Virginia that have already achieved at a higher level.
And that's been part of the problem all along, right? Because Virginia set its bar with standards of learning even higher than the federal No Child Left Behind Act did.
In some ways, that's true. In other ways, the federal government has set these kind of artificial achievement levels so that we're expecting students and schools to achieve at 100%, 100% of the time. And most of us would agree, I wasn't a math major and probably not very good in math when I was in school, but I know that there weren't many students I knew that were achieving at 100%, 100% of the time. So
what's the situation with this bill now? It's passed the House. It goes over to the Senate now, and Emmett Hanger's been working with you on this as well?
Right, and he's got a companion bill that I've co-sponsored, and I think that's coming out of the Senate. So we hope they'll both be passed, and we'll put this in place, and then we'll see what happens this year. I think a lot of legislators intend to, and I would encourage the citizens that have concerns with this, to contact their members of Congress and our two U.S. senators and let them know that they'd like to see them make the change that needs to be made to the federal law so that Virginia is treated more fairly.
Now, I was always confused by George Bush's No Child Left Behind, because it just sort of seemed to go against what I always thought to be the one of the cornerstones of a conservative Republican philosophy was, you know, we're not going to let Washington tell us how to run things like our schools out here in Iowa or something, because we know what our kids need right here on the ground. We're with them every day. I thought that was very surprising.
Well, it is. And I think that the overall goal, nobody disagrees with, at least from my standpoint, high standards and accountability. That's good for our school system.
Absolutely.
But
yes,
States are the ones that should determine that. and not have the federal government set an arbitrary standard, because California is a lot different from Virginia.
Right,
Virginia is
right.
different from Vermont.
Right.
And each state ought to be able to determine what its education policy should be. The other thing about this is there's nowhere in the U.S. Constitution that says it's the federal government's responsibility to determine what public education policy is. That came about because of discrimination in the past, which mm-hmm. rightly the federal courts got the federal government involved in to make sure that people were treated fairly and equitably from a race standpoint, and also from a special education standpoint in some of these other areas. But they've made those areas balloon into basically having the federal government have its fingers in every piece of the pie now, if you will, of public education in the states.
Delegate Steve Landis, our guest. We've got about 2 minutes left. Anything else you're working on that's front burner for you right now?
Well, we passed out of the Appropriations Committee that I'm on a transportation package, House Bill 3202, and it'll be on the floor, I hope, later on, hopefully this weekend or the first of the week, and we'll have a debate on hopefully what'll be the first part of a solution for our transportation challenges in the state. And I'm hopeful that that will pass, and it has some things that people don't like, and there's some things that I don't like, but usually when you have a compromise, there are pieces of the compromise that people don't like, and the other parts they do like. So I think we've got at least a good one to start with, and hopefully that'll move through the process.
Steve Landis represents Virginia's 25th district in the Virginia House of Delegates. He's online at stevelandis.com. Thank you, Steve. It's always an honor to have you with us.
Thank you, Coy.
Take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
This interview will be archived in its entirety on the Charlottesville Podcasting Network at cvillepodcast.com.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit cvillepodcast.com for more.